I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast from Bloomberg Radio, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
The Kentucky Derby on the horizon. I love that. I'm just kind of chomping at the bit, ready to go somewhere. Not sure where, though.
Well, Scarlett, last week's Derby, I mean, the handle for the whole week rose to a record $392 million. And by the way, Churchill Downs invested over $90 million to kind of improve the facilities this year. Really cool stuff.
Yeah. Lux seating and all of that, right? So joining us now is the CEO of the company, Churchill Downs, Bill Carstanjen. Bill, great to speak with you.
Thanks, Scarlett. It's fantastic to be here with you.
So obviously we have you on talking to us because you found a little bit of time in your schedule before the 149th running of the Kentucky Derby on May 6th. What is the state of planning over at Churchill Downs right now?
Well, fortunately, things are going really, really well. This is the 149th consecutive Kentucky Derby as well. So we've had a lot of practice. So the team is firing on all cylinders. And it's a big production. Our team at the track flexes up from about 250 people or so to about 12,000. So it's quite a production. But fortunately, we have some great people that have done it many times before.
Well, I mean, Scarlett, Bill's being far too shy.
Let's
be clear. They invested $90 million to expand premium seat capacity this year after they had a record year in 2022, which far surpassed the 2019 pre-pandemic levels. Let me ask you this, Bill. By the way, congratulations on a tremendous first quarter. I mean, record EBITDA across all three segments. And, you know, I believe, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I know the Arlington acquisition had an impact, but net income was up almost fourfold. So, I mean, amazing job there. What on earth is a historical racing machine? I mean, for our audience, you have to explain what these HRMs are and how it's driving your company's performance.
Yes, happy to do that. And thank you for those kind words. We have a great team here and we've been following our strategies across our three segments, and it's really been paying off. So historical racing machines really are machines that approximate slot machines. A slot machine is a device with a screen, and around the back is a random number generator that's based on an algorithm. Historical racing machines look very similar to slot machines, and the random number generator around back is really based on previously run horse races. So it largely approximates a typical slot machine experience. And its existence is really a function of the fact that different states have different legal rules around how gaming is conducted and how the machines have to work and what machines are okay and what machines are not. And in some states, the form of gaming that is permitted requires some connection to horse racing.
Scarlett, you have to listen to this. I just got to give you this. HRMs in Kentucky alone last year, the handle, $6.8 billion.
Whoa.
In Kentucky alone. I mean, and Wyoming, where there's nobody, I mean, it did $1.3 billion. I'm looking at these numbers and I can't even believe it. And so what does it take to install these in your casino properties, Bill? Like, I mean, is it a big deal or is it just basically plugging it in, turning it on and you know, they will come?
The hard part really is getting the machine manufacturers to modify their production process to build these so that they comply with the rules of each state around historical racing machines. So once we do that, once we can actually get the machines produced, then the process becomes a lot more around the construction of a casino or a casino floor, which we have some practice in. You know, we have a great business going with historical racing machines, but we also have plenty of traditional class three, they call it class three slot machine casino operations across the rest of the company. So we've got gaming experience in virtually every segment of the U.S. gaming market. And once we get the machines produced for us, we fall back into our processes and patterns that we use when we build some of our other traditional casinos.
So can you explain how these HRMs, these historical racing machines, are integrated or related or linked to the general state and the general sport of horse racing? Is there a synergy there? Is there a feed-through?
Often they're required to be at the same place where you have your horse track. That's not universally true, but in general it's true. So sometimes there's a physical connection to horse racing and that they're located in the same spot. But generally the customer bases are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. The typical horse racing player, person that bets on horse racing, can be male or female, tends to be male, tends to like the puzzle of it, more focused on it as a game, more interested in things like sports betting or playing poker. Whereas the HRM machines really attracts male or female, but traditionally tends to be more female, middle-aged, generally more interested in just the experience of playing slot machines as opposed to the experience of doing a puzzle or betting on sports wagering.
Bill, we could sit here all day and talk to you about the content journey for casino operators, but we don't have you for so long, and we got to talk Kentucky Derby. So what's going on? I mean, what's the experience going to be like this year? How's it going to be different from last year? What's your audience expecting?
You hear the old adage, don't build the church for Easter Sunday. That's just not been the case with our operation in Kentucky. The facility is really constructed to house, to entertain 150,000 people on Kentucky Derby Day. So it's quite a production, and hospitality is. And we've had great success constructing, replacing, and building lots of new hospitality to house all kinds of different groups. The Derby itself is really a microcosm of the country. People start at the infield, and then they work their way up to having actual bleacher seats, and then stadium seats, and then a box with their friends, and then indoor dining, and then work their way turf club, the mansion. There's so many different experiences and types of hospitality there. It's really built to serve the needs of America. So all different types of groups, all different types of preferences for hospitality. And folks often over the years graduate in their minds to different levels of hospitality. So it's a kaleidoscope, it's a collage of all kinds of different people looking for all kinds of different hospitality experiences, but sharing this common sort of holiday festival spirit that really infects the whole town.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that everyone gets into. Can you walk us through what the last week will look like? When do the horses, the jockeys start arriving? When do fans and participants start arriving? And how much, I guess I just want to get a sense, since Damien and I unfortunately are not going to make it, what we're going to be missing out on.
Yeah, so the energy hits you, the unique energy of the Kentucky Derby hits you when you arrive in the airport. It really is akin to a holiday. So, for example, on the Friday before the Kentucky Derby, it's the day called the Oaks. It's where it's the race for the fillies. So for the girls, the three-year-old race for the girls, that's a day off from school. That's a holiday in this region. So it gives you a sense of what is it like here. Everything's building towards the Derby. There have been activities going on since about a week ago. Other people have 4th of July fireworks display. This town kicks off with Thunder over Louisville, which is really built around a giant fireworks display. So as we get into this last week, all the horses are here. The jockeys, many of them are here, but many of the owners, the trainers of the horses and the horses themselves, they're all here. And what's happening in this community is a series of events built around everybody's own individual rhythms. How they celebrate with their family. But at the track, we kick off with opening night, which is Saturday. And then we take Sunday and Monday off from racing, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, culminating with Saturday with the Derby. Every one of those days is a really big day. So, for example, on the Oaks, the day before the Derby, we'll have anywhere from 100,000 to 120,000 people.
Wow.
Follow it up the next day with the Derby and 150,000. The Thursday before all this, I don't know what a crowd will be this year, but it'll probably be 40,000 to 50,000. And then you back up earlier in the week. So every day has a theme. Every day has a different set of traditions and festivities around the day. And people don't generally go to every single day. Of course, we do. I do. But everybody has their days that they like to participate sure. in right. before we get to the big day. And they're racing. We're racing horses each of those days.
Bill, I just have one more question for you. How many times a day are you checking the weather? And what's your favorite weather application? I use the Weather Channel. I'm just curious what weather app you use.
Dark sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that got bought out by Apple.
My favorite one is the one that gives us the best news. So it's going to change every day and during the day. But the thing about Kentucky is if you come to Kentucky this time of year, it looks really like Ireland. It's almost emerald green.
Yeah.
It's rainy season. So we get a fair amount of rain in Kentucky during this time of year, and that's why everything's beautiful and green. But it can rain on Derby Day. It usually rains during the week. And so paying attention to the weather is a real art. And it's one of my least favorite parts of what we do because I have absolutely nothing that I can do about it. I have no control over what the weather is going to be. And we're prepared and people come and they have a great experience even if we do get poor weather. But it's a lot more fun for us when the weather's perfect.
Yeah.
So every year I hope for perfect weather. Most years it's good enough. It's rarely perfect, but most years it's pretty good. And it's a great event anyway. But the weather is a real—it's a real subculture here. As everybody's giving lots of advice on what to expect, but who the heck knows? What I've learned is weather in our 21st century here. Weather prediction's not all that accurate. Maybe AI will help us out and make us more accurate. But
I like that. Let's put AI to some good use, right?
Yeah, that would help us. I'd be all for that.
Bill, thank you so much for your time. Bill Carstensen is CEO of Churchill Downs.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Happy Derby, everyone.
Happy Derby.
Thanks,
Bill.
Good
luck to you. That was Bill Carstensen. He is CEO of Churchill Downs, which, of course, is hosting the Kentucky Derby, the 149th running of the Derby. This has been the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Scarlett Fu here with Damian Sassauer. Starting next week, by the way, we will be uploading our podcast shows exclusively on Fridays now. And of course, we will continue to dig into the world of money and sports. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Scarlett Fu.
And I'm on Twitter at DSassauer.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.